I Suck at Dating with Dean Ungler and Jared Haven, an iHeartRadio podcast.
What's going on, sucky daters? Welcome to an all-new, very special episode of Help, I Suck at Dating. I'm trying to talk tenderly right now.
Why?
And I'm doing that intentionally because I'm keeping an eye on my audio levels. I just got this new microphone, and I'm trying not to be too hot into the microphone.
It's very fancy. Did iHeart send that to you, or did you buy it yourself?
Oh, I did not buy it myself. iHeart sent it to me.
Yeah.
It only took 3.5 years, baby, and we're finally stepping our game up.
Finally.
So if you don't like this sweet, sultry version of my voice, too bad, because it's here to stay.
This is like, what is it called when you like tap into a microphone or whisper sweet nothings? What is that called? Come on, you know what I'm talking about. Anybody? Anybody in this universe?
ASMR?
ASMR. Thank you so much. Dean, you can start doing it. Some ASMR. I'd pay for it. You have a sweet, sweet voice.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say. This is also a special episode because I'm incredibly hungover and I feel like dog shit.
You're a little groggy.
You're really going to have to do the heavy lifting on this one, so I hope you're okay.
Why are you so hungover? What happened last night?
I just had like 9 beers. Kaylin brought some friends over and we just like drank and didn't do anything. But I'm getting old, man. The hangovers are way more real when you get old.
Dude, you can't handle it anymore. Neither can I. I could never handle a hangover. That's why I don't like drinking. People are like, why don't you like drinking? It's like, it's not that I don't like drinking. I hate being hungover. Dude, I was hungover a couple years ago at like a mini bachelor party I had here in Rhode Island. And it was all right, I'm going to tell a story right now. It's going to be a little TMI. So if you don't want to hear it, fast forward 2 minutes. I was so hungover the next morning, I couldn't throw up. And I was trying to make myself because I felt so nauseous. My head was killing me. We had to go play golf. It was the worst time. And so it wasn't coming out through my mouth. It came out on the other side. And I was on like the fourth hole and there was no bathroom in sight. So what I did was I grabbed my towel. I went in the woods and I did what I had to do. And then I buried it in the woods and then came back out and finished my golf game.
You finished the round of golf?
Of course. It was like $120. It was a really nice course. You know, honestly, I felt a lot better after that moment too. So I kind of got a second wind.
I've got to say, Jared, I've known you for a while and you've shared a lot of stories on this podcast. That might be the most interesting story I've ever heard you tell.
Yeah, well, I told people it's a little disgusting, so hopefully they fast forward to this point and we can move forward.
That is the most amazing thing I've ever heard anyone say.
And you know, I was golfing with my dad too, and it was his towel.
So the towel was used for cleaning purposes?
Yeah. I'm not going to use leaves. I had no tissues. I had nothing. So what I did was I went in the woods with the towel. And then before I went, like everything was happening so fast, I dug like a quick hole, went into it, and then put the towel.
With your hands?
What do you mean? No. With my cleats, like my feet. I just like.
With your cleats.
It was only like a foot hole. You know what I mean? It's not. Don't think of this as extravagant. But I went in the middle of the woods. So hopefully no animal was near me. And definitely no human being is going to be there anytime soon. Did what I had to do. And then put the towel in there, brushed like a good pile of dirt and leaves on top of it, make sure that it was, you know, really in there, and then walked away.
That is amazing.
It really is, because I don't think the towel is biodegradable, so that's going to resurface at some point.
I mean, I couldn't take it back with me. It was what are we going to have it in the cart for the next 2.5 hours? Like, it's done. It's gone. Bye-bye.
Yeah, on the bright side, once it resurfaces, it will have hopefully weathered enough to not be covered in poop anymore. You know,
I should go back to that golf course 2 years later.
I think you should send Suck Army out there, and whoever finds it gets a Suck Army t-shirt.
Suck Army, please. Don't put yourself through that.
That is incredible. I can't believe you went back out there and finished the round of golf.
Well, I was only on the fourth hole, and I honestly started feeling better. So I was like, all right, here we go. I think I hit a nice little wedge on after that.
You didn't in your head be like, oh, I'll just turn this cart around, go back to the pro shop real quick, poop there, and then go back out.
Dude, it was so, as you guys know, when you're hungover, dude, it was so sudden.
Snuck up on you quick.
And it was, I mean, let me just say this, it was explosive. And it was like, it is now or never. That's how hungover I was. I couldn't throw up, and then I was like, okay, I'm fine. And then I got to like the third or fourth hole, and all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, it's here and there's nothing I can do to stop it.
Oh my gosh. What did your dad have to say about it?
My dad was he's like, take my towel, go do what you need to do. I was like, thanks, Dad. I'll be back. Run in the woods. And then came back. Yeah. He's like feeling better. I was like, actually, I'm feeling like $1 million right now. Let's go putt for birdie.
I have so much more respect for you. So much newfound respect after hearing that story.
I appreciate that. You know, respect isn't the word that comes to mind when I think of that story, but I'm glad it's thrown out there for me.
But on many levels, just you doing it, you sharing it, I just appreciate that.
Let's move on because I doubt Suck Army really wants to hear about my bowel movements any longer. Now, listen, this is a weird segue, but I'm going to do it anyway. We have a meet and greet coming up, people. So if you want to meet me, maybe we can talk about the story. Maybe we won't. Doesn't matter. We have a meet and greet, Suck Army. It's going to be called the Suck Army Summer. It's going to be Friday, July 30th, 4 to 5 p.m. PST. So it's 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time, 4 to 5 over on the West Coast. Friday, July 30th. Tickets are on sale right now at loopedlive.com. You guys can talk to me, can talk to Dean, which obviously we all know you'd rather do. It's going to be a little meet and greet. We can give you advice. We can talk bachelor stories. We can do whatever you want. Get your tickets right now for Friday, July 30th.
What are we going to do for this little meet and greet?
I don't know. Dude, Mark tells us what to do, and then we do it. That's how it goes around here.
This is exciting. I like these things a lot. This is my one thing with these things. They are terrifying. Not terrifying.
Why?
To talk to people for an hour. Terrifying that, in my eyes, zero people are going to be there.
Oh, 1,000%.
I don't know. It's just that's just scary to me. It's like, you know, when you like have a party or something when you were a kid and you invite people over and you're like in the back of your head, you're like, well, what if no one ever shows up? That's kind of what this is like.
Oh, 100%. I always get that fear in the back of my head. Anytime we do any type of meet and greet or somewhere, we go someplace where we said, oh, you know, I'll post about it and hopefully some people come, and then nobody comes. And I'm like, wow, I'm a big fat loser. I'm a failure.
Right.
So Suck Army, don't make Dean and me feel like a failure. Get your tickets right now, loopedlive.com, Friday, July 30th. And like I said, it'll be a nice little fun time.
All this to say, I'm excited for it, and it's going to be a fantastic day, and I want you guys to come. I just want you guys to know I'm a little fearful, you know?
Yeah, we're all fearful. That's the name of the game. If you're not living in fear, you're not living at all. You know, you got to do some things that make you scared.
So if you're listening to this and you want to join the meet and greet, again, when is it, Jared?
July 30th, Friday, 4 to 5 on the West Coast, 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time.
At loopedlive.com was where you can get your tickets. So loopedlive.com.
Again, get your tickets right now, loopedlive.com. I did want to talk about something that we saw on Bloomberg, which is obviously a news source. The dating app Bumble is going to open its first cafe in New York coming in July. Now, July 24th, to be exact, Bumble, which is, of course, the woman make the first move app, is going to open its Bumble Brew in New York. Now, originally, Bumble Brew was focused on a date-friendly food. It was meant for sharing. So that is like no burgers or any dish that have like potential for any type of like embarrassment while eating. We've all been there, right? No spaghetti. Like if you're eating the pasta and you spill some tomato sauce on your white shirt, not good for a first date. So they're not going to have food like that, but it's a cafe that has been reconceived as a safe space for healthy and equitable relationships and connections. Now I'm interested about this because I think this is great because we've talked about a million times with dating apps. Dating apps sometimes, majority of the times, never lead to in real life dates. So many people talk on dating apps. They talk to multiple people. They never end up meeting up. I like this because it seems like this is a direct path to talking on Bumble and then meeting up in real life at this Bumble Brew. So I'm for it. I think Bumble's got something very smart here.
So let me ask you this. You think that's the strategy then, is to meet on Bumble, talk, and then say, hey, let's go to the Bumble Brew and meet up for drinks?
Well, I'm curious about this because I'm wondering if Bumble is going to have like this on the app. You know what I mean? So it's like you can almost schedule a date while talking on a conversation. Because I feel like so many times when you're talking back and forth, like think about when you make plans with somebody. It's like, oh, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Where do you, well, wherever you want to go. No, wherever you want to go. Well, what day works for you? Well, what day works for you? And it's just like this constant back and forth that like as human beings, you can only serve so much attention to. And it's like, okay, I give up. I don't really care that much. We're not hanging out. I feel like that happens a lot on dating apps. So I'm curious if Bumble is going to integrate some sort of technology into this where like, hey, while we're talking, we can make a date at the Bumble Brew. Like, tomorrow at 7. Like, and it's like almost like an open table format, you know, where it's all digital and you make a reservation. I feel like that puts more pressure on people to meet up in real life.
I just think it's only going to be successful if they make it like a trendy enough bar that people are going to just want to go to, like with your friends or something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you and your buddies are out in town. You're like, oh, let's go stop by Bumble Brew real quick. If it's not that, then I don't see anyone going out of their way to go to Bumble Brew if they're already going out of their way to meet up in person. They would just go somewhere else that they already like. So I'm sure it's going to be a nice little spot, but I'm curious to see how they kind of work it all in together. I wonder if like they meet on the app and then they could like send out like, you know, 30% off discounts to the people that are like talking on the app or something like that.
Well, that would be smart. We're just giving Bumble great ideas here. That's what we're here for. Bumble, you should totally hire us. I have a question for you, Dean. So I want you to transport yourself back in time, into single life Dean, back to Deanie Babies, back to Bachelor in Paradise season 4, Dean. So
Deanie Babies,
if you were going on a first date with someone that you had not met and you met on a dating app and you were meeting for the first time in real life, would you rather go to an establishment that you knew everybody else there was also on a first date meeting for the first time? Or would you rather go to a place that's more of a social environment and obviously different dynamics with relationships, you know, different people? It could be families, could be people who are married, meeting for the first time. Like, doesn't matter. Just a regular restaurant. Does it matter to you?
So that's a really good question, Jared. I think that I wouldn't want to go to a place where everyone else is on it. Well, actually, so here's a
There's
little
pros and cons.
Here's a con. A con is, it could be awkward. It's just going to be a room full of awkward people on awkward dates. Mm-hmm. A pro is, let's say the date's not going well, you can just look around the room and be like, everyone else here is also on a first date, so none of those relationships are serious. So let's see if I can like weasel my way in to that girl over there that I've got a big crush on. You know what I mean?
Could be like speed dating.
And that's exactly where my mind went to initially when you said a room full of first dates, because that's what it is essentially, is speed dating. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it would be interesting. My first initial response was like, no way I'd ever want to go to a place like that. But isn't it kind of awkward sometimes when you're a first date and you're like sitting next to a couple that's like married, or it's just like, I don't know. I always kind of felt a little awkward sometimes when I was on a first date with someone in a place and like I was near people who were in a more secure relationship. I don't know. Cause like there'd be times when the conversation went stale and we wouldn't be talking, and it was just, maybe it was just always in my head, but I'm curious if I'd feel more comfortable if I was in an environment where I knew everybody was going through the same thing I was going through, which at times, let's be honest, it's awkward. First dates can be awkward. If the conversation goes stale, there's only so many questions you can ask. There's only so much effort you can put into it. So I'm curious if I was in that environment where I knew everybody around me was going through the exact same feeling I was, if it would make me feel more comfortable or not.
What's an appropriate number of drinks to have on a first date, Jared?
7.
That's the number?
No, I'd say 2.
Hmm.
What's your number?
I was going to say more like, I was going to say 7. No, 7's a little much. Maybe like 4.
7?
Four,
what
or
is
5.
It? Kaylin would be carrying you out of that restaurant. You had 9 last night and you're dead.
Yeah, I'm struggling. My thing with drinking is I am like a supreme lightweight. But not like to hold my liquor, but just like I get affected by it really quickly. So like 3 drinks in, I'm probably like blacked out, but then I can keep drinking until like 10 drinks and be totally fine and act completely the same. But then I wake up the next day and I was like, oh man, I don't remember anything after like 8 p.m. So that's like, that's why 4 drinks is a good number for me. Cause after the third one, you know, if it's going well enough to get to the fourth drink, then, you know, you just go out and you tear up the town, cut up a rug.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a fun time, but you could also, like, embarrass yourself really poorly. I don't know. Like, could you imagine getting drunk on a first date? I don't know. It's just like...
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely gotten drunk on many first dates.
Has anybody gotten drunk on you, where you've been sober?
Well, I never dated while I was sober, you know what I mean? So that doesn't count. But I definitely probably have been on a few dates where the girl got way too drunk, and it was just, like, uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't mean sober where you're not drinking through your daily life. I meant on the date where you've been, you know, you might have had one drink, but you're sober.
I'm trying to recall a specific moment. I can't, but I'm sure it's happened at some point. Was there any moment with you where you like were on a date with a girl that
Yeah, there was a time where I was on a date with a girl and she got pretty sauced up and I was like, oh, this sucks. She was just like kind of loud and obnoxious and started saying inappropriate things. And it was funny, but like, you know, after you say something like seven times and you're like, okay, time for the check. And especially it was, I forget what she was drinking. She was drinking like Cosmos or pomegranate martinis or something like that. And she had like four of them. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm paying for dinner. And these are easily like 13 bucks a pop and she's wasted. Jeez. And I got to get the hell out of here.
Well, you live and you learn. No more of those. Exactly. In your future,
and now I'm happily married and love my wife, and she can have as many pomegranate martinis on my dime as she wants.
You know, Jared, we're going to move on to our guest, but before we move on, I got to say one thing.
Yeah.
I can't believe that we're just living life normally after hearing the story about you having explosive diarrhea in a forest on a golf course.
I'm so confused. Why is this such a thing?
I can't believe we're still not talking about that. It's just, it blows my mind that everything, that the world is still pieced together after hearing that story.
I can't believe this isn't more of a common thing. Like, don't people like go to golf courses all the time where like, you know, they're drunk or hungover and it's just like people are throwing up. Maybe not the nice golf courses, but you know what I mean?
Here's the thing. If I shared that story from your perspective, if I was like, yeah, I ran into the forest and took a poop real quick and came back out, everyone would be like, that makes sense. Normal. That's exactly what we expect. Dean
sounds like
do.
A Tuesday night for Dean.
And the fact that you did it, I feel like a proud father, you know, like a proud parent. Like, I don't know. It's the best thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Guys, I'm a grizzly man. I'm a mountain man. I should be living in a van. It's headed towards that direction. Look at me. I have multiple rings on. I feel like Dean. I'm wearing bracelets now.
What's the middle finger ring about?
It's so Ashley got it for me. It's a Superman. It's not a wedding band. It's just a Superman band. It's black with a silver Superman symbol on there, and it's really cool. And she didn't want me to wear it instead of my wedding band. She's like, no, I want you to continue wearing your wedding band. So it fits well on the middle finger, and I kind of like the look of it. And so,
it's cool. I see you have the S facing yourself. I see.
Well, I mean, so you think I should have it on like the side of the palm of my hand? So when I hold up for like high fiving people, they see the Superman symbol.
No.
Like high five, guys.
That's not what I meant at all. Oh. What I mean is the S is facing like, you know, upside down wise. I would think it would go the other way. So that way, right. So now people are like, whoa, Superman.
Yeah, but now I can't see it.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So you are wearing it for yourself.
Ring for myself?
Which, no, it makes total sense. I mean, you want to look down and get, you know, whatever you want to get out of it. So, I mean, sick rings, sick bracelet, sick poop story. I'm excited for Elizabeth
Greenwald. Sick for a segment, guys.
She's sick for a segment. We're going to jump into Elizabeth Greenwald. She is the author of Love Lockdown, Dating, Sex, and Marriage in America's Prisons. She is incredibly interesting and has a lot of interesting stories to share. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. Dean, myself, we have a very special guest who is on the line right now. She is the author of Love Lockdown, Dating, Sex, and Marriage in America's Prisons. It is going to be available on Amazon July 13th, if I'm correct. It is Elizabeth Greenwald. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh my God, of course. So your book, Love Lockdown, is available July 13th, correct?
Correct.
Perfect.
Available for pre-order before, but it hits the world July 13th.
Well, everybody listening, go pre-order the book right now. So tell everybody, Love Lockdown, what is it about? What inspired you to write this book?
So Love Lockdown is a nonfiction look at the relationships that form between people in prison and people on the outside. So we often hear about the kind of most extreme version of this relationship. You know, someone like Scott Peterson arrives on San Quentin and it has all this fan mail from admirers waiting for him. So that definitely is a thing that happens with these kind of higher profile murderers, often the case. But there's a much more kind of mundane strain of this dating that happens too, often through pen pal sites, where someone just out in their life will log on, find someone in prison to write with for a whole variety of reasons sometimes, and, you know, Cupid's arrow strikes. So in my book, I follow five couples, all of whom met while incarcerated over the course of 5 years, and trace some of the ups and downs of these relationships, from prison weddings to people getting out and coming home and, you know, seeing if these relationships work in the free world.
So my first question is, what inspired you to write this book? Because it is such an obscure subject matter. You know, a lot of people don't think about prisoners falling in love or getting married. And so what was it about it that really interested you?
I struck up a correspondence with a person in prison when I was reporting my first book, Playing Dead. And that's a book about people who fake their own deaths. So another kind of odd topic, if you will. So one of the people I interviewed in that book was a man named Sam Israel, and he faked his death in 2008 by staging his suicide off the Bear Mountain Bridge in upstate New York. We corresponded mostly for the interviews for that book over CoreLinks, which is one of these many third-party email application systems that connects people in prison with those on the outside. So I asked him, you know, all about what that experience was like. What was it like to get the idea to fake your own death? What was it like to go through that, et cetera? You know, and our interviews wrapped up, but we still stayed in touch and we emailed frequently. And he told me at one point that often his story is featured on these cable news shows like American Greed. And every time it is, he'll get a new batch of fan mail from people, usually women, who are intrigued and want to know more about him. So I was just so interested in that phenomenon. And, you know, having had this experience of this very particular type of friendship with someone in prison through Sam, you know, that's very unique to and very different from what we have on the outside, which is like, you know, texting like three things in a row, then not hearing from someone for 20 minutes. It's like this very laser-like focused communication. So I kind of got the appeal in that sense. So I was just really wanted to know, you know, who are these people that write prisoners and what do they get out of the relationship? I think that's what kind of boggles a lot of our minds when you can't be face-to-face and in the same space with someone much of the time.
I gotta be honest with you. I thought that story was going to take a different turn and that you were going to say something. I thought you and Sam struck up a romance.
No, we did not. Always in the friend zone with Sam.
Nice. Well, that's good. I mean, I think it would have been a funny segue into the book now.
It'd be a different book, that's for sure.
So picking your own death has to be illegal, right? That's why Sam's in prison?
Great question. So there's no crime called faking your own death. So in that sense, it's not illegal, but almost any of the ancillary crimes you have to commit in order to fake your own death, like identity fraud, you know, making it appear as if you have gone missing and costing the state and city like thousands of dollars for your search and rescue. All of those things are illegal. But in this one very narrow framework, it is not illegal. So Sam was a hedge fund manager and was charged with wire fraud in the end.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting. So for your book, Love Lockdown, it took you 5 years to gather information and write. Is that correct?
Yeah, it took 5 years because I wanted to see, you know, I didn't realize this setting out to write this book, but I learned pretty quickly. In order for there to be anything to write about in these relationships need to unfold and they unfold in real time. So I had to stick around to see what happened in a lot of cases. And doing reporting within the prison system in the United States takes a long time. I would write to people and they wouldn't get my letters for months and months, or I would set up interviews that would be during visiting hours that would be canceled at the last minute because of a fight or something like that.
How would you choose which people you were going to write about? Like, how did you know who was dating? How did you get this information?
Yeah.
It feels like you can only know this stuff from being on the inside. You know what I mean? It's like high school.
Well, totally. It kind of is. I mean, it's a good point you bring up. You know, once I found the main couple I wrote about in the book, Joe and Ben, and I followed their relationship from their wedding day until he's released from prison over the course of 5+ years. you know, doors just kind of opened up. They'd say, oh, well, you should talk to this person, you should talk to that person, et cetera. But I knew just from kind of anecdotally from, you know, lurking in groups and Instagram accounts online that have to do with this world, that this is a really actually quite diverse group of people. You know, this isn't necessarily who you think of as your stock character, prison wife, who's kind of like at home and desperate and bored. You know, these are really a diverse group of people. So I wanted to find couples that reflected those demographics. I wanted to find couples where some people had gotten out of prison already, and how do those marriages last, you know, given the challenges they face. And I wanted to really find people who were very reflective and thoughtful and were not these kind of deluded people we might imagine them to be. So, you know, finding everything to fit in that Venn diagram definitely took some time.
So with Joe, for instance, it sounds like he got married in prison.
Yes, her husband, Ben, was serving a term at that point. Mm-hmm. And they met through a pen pal site while he had already served some years of his sentence.
Interesting. Can you, I mean, I'm sure you probably cover it in your book. Can you kind of just describe what a prison wedding is like?
Yeah. So, you know, they like everything in prison, it varies facility to facility. So the one I observed took place at the Oregon State Penitentiary, which is a maximum security prison. And twice a year, they cancel regular visiting hours at the prison and the whole day's cleared for weddings. So the day I was there, I saw about, gosh, maybe a dozen couples who are all getting married. You know, you've got your chance twice a year. You have to bring in your own chaplain or officiant, which in Joe's experience was actually somewhat hard to find. You know, some people hear prison wedding and they don't return your calls.
Well, especially if I'm being fully transparent, maximum security, you know, this isn't your medium security or intake or anything like that. Like, you're talking about some serious things that happen, or, you know, happen to these serious crimes these people committed. And so that's interesting. That's right. I'm sure there's a lot of people who would be very hesitant to enter that atmosphere.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons why I love it, talking to Joe so much, is because one of the things she told me on her first visit to Ben, you know, after they'd been emailing and talking on the phone for almost a year, she said, you know, what in the world am I doing trying to get into a maximum security prison? People are trying to get out of this place. What am I doing walking in? So yeah, that's absolutely true. But, you know, the wedding itself, they did a nice job. You know, they cleared out the tables and chairs in one part of the room, and they'd kind of just strung up like an archway that the prisoners made themselves, and, you know, a little aisle to walk down. And, you know, it was a very kind of intimate affair. And the big deal about weddings, at least in this one facility, because it is maximum security, regular visits, the couple is separated by a table. You can't sit next to each other, and you get, you know, like a hug at the beginning of the visit and a hug at the end. After the wedding, on this day, the couples were allowed to sit next to each other to kind of like have their arm around each other, which, you know, that's as spicy as it gets in the maximum security prison. So it was exciting for them.
So for couples that aren't forced to date from prison into real life, we have obviously all our own struggles, like where to eat, what to buy for the house, all that kind of stuff. What are like the big struggles that a couple like Ben and Joe are faced with? Like, what were like the big things that you were like, that's kind of a big deal?
So with prison relationships, really everything comes down to communication, because communication is really all you have, you know, whether that's via letter writing, phone calls, you know, these third party emails that some facilities have that are pretty like exorbitant rates for what you consider email, which is free in the free world. So it's really figuring out communication, because the whole relationship is compressed into that. So anytime there's a misunderstanding or something feels off, it takes on this huge significance. And because you're in prison, you can't just call the prison and say, hi, I'd like to talk to, you know, inmate number 834, whatever. They can only, the person in prison can only call you, usually for 15 minutes at a time. A lot of the couples I interviewed joke that they had to learn to figure out how to fight 15 minutes at a time.
That's funny.
So that's a big deal. And then I think the other part too is figuring out how you have intimacy with someone who's in prison. You know, conjugal visits exist in only 4 states in this country, and not every facility in those 4 states offers them.
When you say conjugal visits, you mean visitations without supervision?
Precisely. Yeah. It's, conjugal visits is actually kind of a misnomer. They're really known as family visits in many of these states. And what that means is that people who are immediate family, so spouses, parents, children, can come together usually over the course of about a week, the length of a weekend, to have a private visit in usually a kind of trailer or bungalow on prison property. And the prisoner still has to come out for count every few hours, but the rest of the time it's private. So in those instances, yes, you do get to have sex with your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife. You know, that is not the reality for the vast majority of people who are in a relationship with a prisoner in this country. So how do you, you know, have intimacy otherwise?
Do you have couples that are in prison at the same time? Like, are there couples, or is this all just one prisoner and then one person who's not in the prison? No, there are. Okay.
This was one of my, this was one of the most interesting chapters to research to me. So I profile a couple where they are both actually inmates in a prison, Sherry and Damone. Sherry is a trans woman who is serving her time in a men's prison in the Midwest.
Wow.
So they met while in prison, but the really interesting factor in their relationship that I was totally unaware of prior to researching this book was there's a piece of legislation called PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act, which on its face sounds great because prison rape, bad. We don't want that, right? But the law has really broad language. And what it says basically is that there is no such thing as a consensual sex act in prison, even among inmates themselves.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is used often to penalize LGBTQ people in prison. So these two had a relationship, but it was always kind of under the shadow of PREA, you know, which can result in anything from disciplinary infractions to more time in solitary confinement. So they did have a completely consensual, loving relationship, but it was always kind of under threat of, you know, kind of institutional scrutiny.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty intense. It's just insane to think about. I think, you know, we've had this picture in our mind from film or television series about like what prison is like. And how like every inmate is just looking to stab the other one. So when you were talking about the weddings having been done in prison and prisoners like creating these different, you know, intricate details to make the wedding a little bit nicer, I don't know. It feels like a little bit of a community, which is why I wanted to ask if you find that like it's not just a prisoner and somebody who's outside of prison who gets together, but people who meet, you know, in prison and start dating. It's kind of like their own little world.
It is. It absolutely is. And the point of community that you bring up is so interesting, because that's what I saw again and again, particularly with women who find themselves in these relationships. For many of them, they've had nothing to do with prison their entire lives. This whole world is completely foreign. And then, you know, they're telling their family at Thanksgiving, oh, guess what? I'm engaged to this guy in prison. And their families are, you know, oftentimes very upset about that fact.
Yeah.
So what happens is they end up making friendships, usually online through support groups with other people who have gone through this. And they build these like incredible friendships and communities in a way where, to me, the men in the relationships almost become incidental, and it becomes so much more about these really rad female friendships. It was like very cool to watch.
But this has to be interesting, because it doesn't, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, it doesn't sound like it was a couple, for instance, and one of them goes to prison and they continue to date from there. in the case of at least Joe and Ben, it sounds like Joe sought out Ben while he was in prison, right? So she
all
kind
the
of...
couples, yeah, all the couples in my book met while incarcerated, so they did not know each other prior to one person going to prison.
Right. So I can only imagine, like you said, you're sitting down at Thanksgiving dinner. It's bad enough if your partner is in prison, but then I think it kind of adds a whole new dynamic to it when you tell them that you are the one that started sending him.
Yeah, that you guys developed a relationship while they were incarcerated. I agree with you, Dean. That is an entirely different scenario.
That's crazy.
It is.
And like you said, they're unfamiliar with navigating the, you know, the penal system and all that stuff, but they were the ones that went out of their way to strike up the relationship. So it's kind of, I don't know. I'm so interested in this book now. I definitely have to give it a read. Through all of your research and all your findings and all your conversations, the Priya thing sounds pretty fascinating. What was another thing that you uncovered or were surprised by through everything?
So I think, you know, the thing that we wonder often is, you know, can these relationships last in the real world? You know, what happens when he or she gets out, comes home? Is this a real relationship? And what I found, at least in my very small sample size of five couples that I followed, mm-hmm. and, you know, others that didn't make it into the book, of course, is that the rate of success I would say I witnessed is about parallel to that, you know, out here in the free world, where it's about half, you know.
Yeah.
People break up and people stay together. And what I've seen, the reasons why they break up really have very little to do with prison itself. It has more to do with incompatibility, sometimes with, you know, people struggling with addiction, mental health issues, you know, and we see that out here too. So I think that kind of, that rate of success was really interesting to me.
Yeah,
that's fascinating for sure.
It's interesting to think that, you know, a lot of these, you don't think of prison relationships, but there is, you know, I'm trying to like formulate my words while I'm spitting them out, which is what usually happens on this podcast. it's just interesting to me to think that, yeah, there's this whole different world of relationships, and like the success rate is not that much different than what's happening in the real world. Dating is hard, whether you're in prison or out of prison. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to communication. Like a lot of the same core values that you have in a relationship that you're not in prison are the same core values that you have for a relationship that is occurring while someone's incarcerated. I don't know. That's interesting to me.
What's the motivation for these women to, and I assume it's mostly women reaching out to men, right? What's the motivation for them?
Most often. So the thing I heard again and again was that I wasn't looking for anything. I wasn't looking for a relationship. I wasn't looking to fall in love, you know, cut to a year later and we're walking down the aisle. Often people were writing to prisoners, usually out of, you know, a kind of spiritual compulsion, you know, volunteering for a prison ministry. That's one couple I write about in my book. She was an editor at the New York Times at the time.
Damn.
And was volunteering. Yeah. She was volunteering for her church's prison ministry and got a letter and, you know, resisted. And they ended up finally meeting up to be friends, and it was irresistible.
I mean, if somebody writes you a letter while you're incarcerated and then they take the time to come visit you, like you can't get someone to go on a date after you talk to them on Bumble. You know what I mean? These people are writing letters and then going to the prison to visit you. That's when you know what? That's a message for me to all the people out there on dating apps who can't say that they can't take the time to meet someone in real life. Like these people are going down to your local prison to meet the love of their lives. All right. You can go to Dunkin' Donuts to grab a coffee with the person that you want to go on a date with. That's
what I'm exactly on. Right. And what a lot of the people I interviewed said, because of that very factor you're talking about, you can't just stumble into this. You can't just like text someone you up and like, you know, you get together. Like it's so deliberate when you choose to be in a relationship like this. So the thing that the refrain from them was always, I didn't fall into love. I walked into love. I had to make this deliberate choice every step along the way that this is what I wanted.
I think a lot of people need to take that message to heart, whether you're in prison or not, because I think think that's a good message to send people. You know, don't forget, you have to put effort into things. Elizabeth, thank that's you right. so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Everybody listening, July 13th, go get her book, Love Lockdown, Dating, Sex, and Marriage in America's Prisons. You can also pre-order it right now on Amazon.com. Elizabeth Greenwood, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Everybody, welcome back to Help I Suck at Dating, and I hope my voice sounds good in this microphone.
ASMR, man, you should get into it. Just whisper.
Yeah, you want?
We should do this whole podcast whispering into the microphone.
We're gonna whisper the emails. Emails coming. My favorite segment. I have the goosebumps. I can't tell if they're good goosebumps or bad goosebumps.
I think all
right, we're gonna jump into the emails. And Mark, unfortunately, just had to step out. Easton, unfortunately, I don't even know where he is. So
he saw Black Widow last night. So he had a big night. He's probably too wasted, too hungover to come onto this podcast.
He's recovering from seeing Black Widow last night.
It's been a long time since he saw a Marvel movie in theaters, man. You know, it's a big thing.
Yeah, dude, I saw Cruella. Have you seen Cruella yet?
No, was it good?
It is so good.
I heard it's
great.
We
went to the movie not expecting it to be good or anything like that. It blew my mind. It was so good, in fact, I convinced my buddy to watch it, and I sat on the couch with him and watched it a second time in a couple days later.
Oh, wow.
So if you're listening to this, go see Cruella.
What's the worst movie you've ever seen in movie theaters? Do you remember?
I do remember.
Which
one? It was Avatar, The Last Airbender, live action movie.
It's a bad movie.
It was so bad. I'm pretty critical already when it comes to movies. I walked out 30 minutes into that movie, and I've never walked out of a movie in my entire life.
It was terrible. The worst movie I ever saw in theaters was 10,000 BC. Do you remember this movie?
I kind of do.
Oh, dude, it's terrible.
That's the comedy. No, that movie's hilarious, isn't it?
No, you're thinking of the Michael Cera one where they're born in the Stone Age. No, 10,000 BC was a movie by Roland Emmerich, who directed Independence Day, and it's about life during 10,000 BC. Dude, it was so bad. But the reason it's so frustrating as well is I worked at Hollywood Video at the time, and we had passes to go see movies before they came out. They showed like screeners, and it was to Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And I was like, oh, I really want to see Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I heard it's really good. So I went with a buddy of mine. We're walking into the theater and 10,000 BC is playing at the exact same time right next door. And he's like, dude, I really want to see 10,000 BC. Like, I'm dying to see this movie. Can we see Forgetting Sarah Marshall another time? I was like, yeah, sure, man, whatever. It's a Roland Emmerich film. I'm sure it's great. And it sucked so badly. He literally, the lights came on in the movie. He turned to me, he goes, I'm so sorry, man. And then, of course, Forgetting Sarah Marshall is a cult classic and a movie that I love. So that was always, when I look back, I'm like, that is the worst movie theater experience I've ever had. I digress.
And now you know. And now you know. You got to have one. You got to have one lemon to really make the rest worth it.
Yeah.
All right, emails. Let's go. We jump into this one with Anonymous, a.k.a. Nick Vial. Dean and Jared, has there ever been a moment in your current relationships where you thought you might have broken up? Wow. Incredible question, Anonymous. I'll start, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes, there have been many moments. No, maybe not many moments, but especially in the beginning of our relationship, there were moments where, I don't know, actually, now that I say it out loud, there were moments that I was like, normally I probably would like stop talking to someone because of this, but we are already decided to be in a relationship with each other.
We're too far gone, so I'm just going to stick through it.
Well, okay, so this is the really interesting component with mine and Caitlin's relationship. Normally when you date someone, you go on, you know, like, let's say you go on like 5 to 10 to 15 dates with someone until eventually you're like, you know what, I like you enough to be my girlfriend. Do you want to be my girlfriend? And they would either say yes or no. Caitlin and I knew each other for 3 days. And I went up to Caitlin and I was like, hey, do you want to be my girlfriend? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, great, let's get out of here. So we literally knew each other for 3 days before we were fully boyfriend-girlfriend. We didn't have like that dating phase or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a weird way that kind of helped us because it was like, we're in this, you know, you're my girlfriend, I'm your boyfriend. Like there are parts of the relationship that we obviously need to figure out. We don't even know anything about each other yet. So I digress. And I will say that maybe there weren't moments where I thought that we should break up, but there were a lot of like, there was a lot of growing pains in our relationship.
Yeah, I would say the exact same thing, that there's not a moment in my relationship where I felt that Ashley and I were ever going to break up. I would say there were moments in our friendship, of course, where I thought that we were not going to be a part of each other's lives. But when, since we ever got together, no, there's never been a doubt in my mind, and there's never been a doubt in her mind. And to Dean's point, you know, a lot of it came from the fact that when we started dating, you know, we're so good for one another that we never wanted to break up with, you know, we just knew how good we were together. And I don't think we ever really wanted to experience life without the other person. And that, you know, so at it came to a point where obviously I was the one who was like, I need to make a move. I need to make a change. I need to make a commitment. And so that's exactly what I did. And it was the best decision of my life. And ever since we made that commitment, no, there's never been a doubt that we might have broken up. And to Dean, to your point about Kaylin, let me just say this. I don't think you're ever going to find anybody better for you than Kaylin, as an outside perspective.
I don't disagree. I think about that all the time. I think about how lucky I am. And then
she's very lucky too. You're an amazing human being. You guys are both lucky. You guys are a great couple. And, I really hope
that she's the luckiest girl in the world.
Obviously. If you guys break up, I might have a little bit of a mental breakdown. So you have to stay together for me, because if you guys break up, I'm not even sure I'm going to believe in love anymore. So pressure's on.
I promise you, Jared, I'll stay together with Kaylin just for you.
Appreciate it. Stay together for the kids, you know? You said you were a proud papa earlier in this podcast. Come on, man.
And likewise to you and Ashley, you know, you guys break up. That I think that a lot of people's worlds would crumble if you and Ashley broke up. Not just mine.
The world would crumble.
Mark, Easton, I'm certain that things would shatter.
Oh, yeah.
There would be rumblings throughout the world of you guys breaking up.
The skies would turn red. Right. Fires everywhere.
You guys are obviously never going to do that, because you said your vows, and vows are forever. So
that's right.
It's, why would we even concern ourselves with that hypothetical?
Exactly.
So, I mean, I guess that's funny, because my first instinct to that question from the emailer was, yeah, of course I've thought about it. But then the more we talked about it, I'm like, of course I haven't thought about it. So I kind of flip-flopped on that one pretty hard.
Well, that's a good thing. It could have been worse. You could have been like, of course not, and then think about a lot of situations, be like, actually, we almost did break up a few times, didn't we? So I think it's better that you have your flip-flop rather than a different flip-flop. All right, next email, our last one of the podcast. Caroline, what song do you think of when you hear Caroline?
Caroline.
I think of that too.
Mighty fine.
Yeah, Caroline. But I really want to think of Sweet Caroline. But it's always the second song that comes to mind. Bum, bum, bum.
That's kind of surprising for you, for a Northeasterner.
I know. Boston Red Sox, seventh inning stretch every time. Sweet Caroline. But Caroline is just so catchy. You know, how do you not think of that song? Anyway, Caroline wrote an email and said, I have been dating this guy for about a year now. He is so sweet and treats me so well. I feel like I'm in love with him, but for some reason I'm waiting for some kind of sign. How did you guys know you were in love with your respective partners?
I think if you wait around for a sign to come, you're going to spend a lot of time waiting around. So I think the fact that you're even questioning it is a good thing, right? Like,
yeah, she's questioning herself, which is a good thing. You always want to question yourself.
I think almost like this is their sign. If you're looking for a sign, you talking about whether or not there needs to be a sign or not, that's your sign, right?
Yeah. I 100% agree. I mean, like in life, I don't feel like you're ever going to really feel 100% confident about anything. That's just not what life is all about. You're always going to have doubts. You're always going to have these little voices in your head telling you, oh, you could be making a mistake, but that's what living is. You know, you're never sure about anything. You take risk. You live in fear sometimes. That's what it's all about. But as long as you love this person and you want to be with this person and there's nothing wrong and you can see yourself building a life and sharing a life with this person, then go for it. Because like Dean said, if you're waiting for a sign, unfortunately, signs will not come. You got to go. You got to go after the things you want in life. So don't wait for a sign.
Was there a sign for you and Ashley? Or was it just...
No, it was more, again, I hate saying it, but when she started dating someone else, it like... you know, really made me look in the mirror and question a lot of things that a lot of decisions I've made and things that I want in life, and made me question a lot of things about myself. And so it certainly wasn't a sign. I got lucky in the sense that there was this action that took place that forced me to either run away or take action. And, you know, obviously I took action and now we're married.
I'm really proud of you, man. I'm really proud of you for taking action.
You know, that's what it's all about. You're very proud of me throughout this entire podcast. It's a good podcast. I'm feeling good about myself, ladies and gentlemen. That's a good way to end this one. Help I Suck at Dating. Big thank you to Elizabeth Greenwood for joining us once again. Get her Amazon book, or excuse me, her book on Amazon, which is going to be sold starting July 13th. But you can get it right now by pre-order. It's called Love, Lockdown, Dating, Sex, and Marriage in America's Prisons. Very interesting topic. So go check that out. And of course, we have Suck Army Summer Friday, July 30th from 7 to 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 4 to 5 on Pacific Standard Time. Get your tickets right now. LoopedLive.com.
Speaking of Amazon, I don't know why I am just constantly being butt dialed by you.
I know. What is that?
I don't know. You tell me. It happened twice yesterday. It happened a couple times like a couple weeks ago.
You know what's weird about that? So I looked at my phone and I did not see any outgoing phone calls to you. However, I had a voicemail because I had two missed calls from you. And that's when you, all right, full story here. Yesterday, apparently I butt dialed Dean two times and then he called me twice. And I were
wait, no, I never called you. I just texted you.
What? Dude, then you butt dialed me.
No, I did it. I swear to God, I did it.
Because, wow, there is some like weird technology thing going on between the two of us.
Here's the voicemail that I got from you.
To continue recording where you left off, press 4.
This is your voicemail. It was like an automated recording. And then the next one, you did it twice. And I have no outgoing calls to you, so I don't know what's going on.
I want to play the voice message that I got from you. Because, hold on, let me look at my phone. There's something going on between our phones. I have two missed calls from Dean Unglert yesterday at 6:53 and 6:49 p.m., including a voicemail that I'm going to play for you right now. So my voicemail was it's ringing, so I guess I'm calling you, and it's your voicemail.
Hey, this is Dean. I'm so sorry I missed your phone call, but leave a message. I'll get back to you.
That's my voicemail that I got from you. I have no idea what the hell's going on.
Well, so that the two missed calls that I have from you are from the exact same time yesterday. What? I missed your call at 6:50 and at 6:54. Eastern time yesterday.
See, and I have two missed calls from you at 6:49 and 6:53, so literally 1 minute earlier, and a voicemail of your voicemail.
I'm instigating it.
Dude, there's like
the weird thing was I was like on my phone, I was like on Instagram or something, and then all of a sudden you started calling, and I darn it, I kind of put myself into a hole here. I just don't answer phone calls, and so I didn't answer your phone call, and then. You called me again 4 minutes later, and that's when I texted you. I was like, hey, are you okay? Like, is everything okay?
I know.
You're
he
like,
was
I'm doing
so
this
sweet.
Amazon Live thing.
Suck Army, I want to let you know how sweet of a person Dean is. He texted me back, and he said, hey, are you okay? Oh, he was... Oh, that, like, it was like, oh, Dean cares. Dean cares. Love you, buddy.
If you call someone twice in 5 minutes, you think that there's like something going on.
Yeah, something's wrong.
I didn't realize I was the one calling you for those 5 minutes.
I guess
anyways,
so.
We got to figure this out. I got to go talk to Verizon and sell this so we can stop butt-dialing each other. Big thank you to you guys for tuning into this week's episode. Big thank you to Caroline. Big thank you to Anonymous. Big thank you to Elizabeth Greenwood. I think you already thanked her. Check out her book, Love Lockdown, in a couple days when it comes out. Meet and greet July 30th. I'm excited for that. We can't wait for you guys, but we will also be here next week where maybe we will suck just a little bit less.
Follow Help I Suck at Dating on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.